Hi, friends. It's Vin Scully. It's time for
Dr. Clapper.
In sports, there's winning and losing and getting injured. That's why there's Dr. Clapper.
Dr. Clapper is the former head of orthopedic surgery at Cedars-Sinai.
The Weekend Warrior Show with Dr. Clapper, presented by Cedars-Sinai.
Hey, Dr. Clapper.
How are you?
Saturday mornings from 7 to 9.
Silence is golden when you can't think of a good answer.
Yes, Doc, I love your show.
Now, here he is, Dr. Robert Clapper.
Good morning, Los Angeles. And welcome to another edition of the Weekend Warrior Show. I'm your host, Dr. Robert Clapper. I'm an orthopedic surgeon at Cedars-Sinai for 31 years. What a big day in surgery yesterday. God, my first hip, basketball player, 6'4", only 45 years old. Why do young people need me to put new cartilage in their hip at such a young age? It comes from the fact that, yes, you're active, but not everybody active needs a hip replacement. What causes the problem is the mismatch of the ball and the socket. When you're born and there's not a perfect match of the ball to fit in the socket, we call it dysplasia. If there's a slight mismatch, just like the alignment on your car is off, you're going to wear out your tires prematurely. You're going to wear out your cartilage, and it will be bone on bone prematurely. Rolling over in bed is going to wake you up from a deep sleep. Limping, looking at a staircase with dread. What a joy it is to be able to return a normal life to someone with surgery. Go do six of them in a single day, though. I'm tired, but never too tired to get up to be with you guys each and every Saturday morning. And I really can't thank you enough for doing it and telling all your friends. I am so excited for today's guest. You know how excited I was when I had the Michelangelo expert? You know how much the sculptor Michelangelo meant to me, having William E. Wallace, the professor and chairman of the Department of Art History at the University of Washington in St. Louis? That was just a legendary moment for the Weekend Warrior Show to have him on. Well, this morning, it's another legendary guest for me, someone I've wanted to talk to for my whole life because of how much his company meant to my father and meant to me. My guest is Steve Richmond. He's the boss of the Milwaukee Tool Company, and they make my favorite tool for carpenters called the Milwaukee Sawzall. This saw changed my father's life in an instant. I remember as an eight-year-old seeing the joy on my dad's face when he brought home from the lumberyard his first used, he couldn't afford to buy a new one, used Sawzall, which, by the way, I still have in the red box it came in, rusty as hell. How long is this? The 60s till 2020? You can only imagine, and he bought it used. He was so elated, my dad, and could not wait to tell me how this device, this new saw, would change his life. It was what they call a game changer for him. Instead of 15 minutes it took to cut the wooden 2x4 stud to make room for the electric outlet box, they call that framing a house, for example, or when you remodel a house, you rip down a wall, well, the bones behind the wall are the 2x4s, which when I grew up were 2 inches by 4 inches wood. Now you're never going to see a wooden 2x4. They're all made of aluminum, but the world has changed in that regard. But my dad had to deal with wooden 2x4s, and he used a hammer and a chisel, taking that pencil from behind his ear, and he showed me. He said, "Robbie, now I can zip with this power tool in tight spots and in seconds do the same job." This moment in my life made such an impression on me that I remember saying to myself, when I grow up, I'm going to make something that will change the life of people like this tool changed the life of my dad and made him so happy. And that's why I have so many tools designed for the operating room. Those tools I've designed are used all over the world. 6 patents I hold. But it made me think all week, where are the game-changing tools in the world of art, in the world of sports, and certainly in the world of surgery? Well, in sports, in 1967, the world of surfing, you know how much I love surfing, changed in an instant. It was the creation of a shorter surfboard. It was the Duke Hanamoku contest in Hawaii. Up until that point, very long surfboards were used by the Hawaiians to ride waves. The idea was by the Hawaiians to slide down the face of the wave and use the energy that was going through the wave. All they wanted to do was catch the wave and go down the face and feel the power in the ocean. Well, in 1967, an Australian surfer who had visited the islands in 1963, named Bob McTavish, he came to Hawaii this visit to Sunset Beach for this contest, and he rode a shortboard, a much shorter surfboard, half the size of the boards the Hawaiians were using. And guess what he did? For the very first time, he didn't just come down the face of the wave. He turned at the bottom and rode up the face of the wave. No one had ever done such a thing before. And it was because of the new tool he invented, this new shorter surfboard. Wait till you hear the reaction and how this all started, the game changer in sports that I love the most. Coming up in a minute, you're going to hear that. Well, what about in art? The revolution in art happened in 1841 when an American painter born in New Hampshire, grew up in Boston and New York, named John Rand. He was a nobody painter, portrait painter. But you know what he did in 1841? He changed the world of art forever because he got a patent on putting oil paint into a zinc tube. Now you might say to yourself, big deal, he put the oil paint in a tube. What is that? Why is that a game changer? Aha. The reason it was a game changer was because painters no longer had to stay indoors mixing their paint, powders and oils. They could go outside where there's wind and there's rain. They couldn't do that before. They started to try to capture the light, different times of day, different seasons. It's called plein air painting. And who did it better than anyone else? The French painters called the Impressionists, headed by Claude Monet. These guys could go outside and work on capturing what the sunlight looked like during the different times of day and different seasons. It was a revolution in art. Renoir, one of the leaders of Impressionistic painting, he said, without John Rand, there would be no Impressionism. In a minute, you're going to hear from one of the greatest art historians. She's since passed away. She's a nun, Sister Wendy Beckett. Treat yourself one day. Go on YouTube and listen to some of her lectures. But you're going to hear her talk about the revolution in art, Impressionism, because of the game changer of tube paint, the fact that the oil paint was in a tube. What about Clapper Vision? You need to call in a little bit later in the show. The number is 877-710-ESPN. But Clapper Vision, we have to talk about the passing at age 77 of Gale Sayers, the Hall of Fame running back for the Chicago Bears, the movie Brian's Song. I had the pleasure. In fact, we had him on the show. Bernie Casey did hip surgery on him, and he called in to talk about it. But he was one of the athletes, the actors portrayed in the show, made-for-TV movie Brian's Song. But Gale Sayers ended his career. He only played 7 seasons in the NFL, and with injuries and whatnot, it's really only like 5 seasons. But what he did in those 5 seasons blew everyone's mind. One of the greatest running backs to ever hold a football. But his career ended because of a torn ACL in his knee. Adrian Peterson had the same injury, but because of the new technology, the game-changing technology of the arthroscope, he came back the next year, almost broke the rushing record of Eric Dickerson. Well, Saquon Barkley for the Giants just tore his ACL. He's not going to have an ending to his career like what Gale Sayers did because of the game-changing tools and technology of the arthroscope. It's the game-changing, it's the equivalent of with your naked eye looking at the moon and someone coming onto your street and saying, hey, I brought a telescope. Now you can look at the moon and see the surface. That's what arthroscopy has brought to my world of orthopedic surgery. I don't just open up the whole knee and look inside. I can look through a puncture wound in your knee, the size of a small pen, that telescope, and see parts of the ligament we never saw before. That allows us to fix your knee now so you can be like Adrian Peterson and not Gale Sayers. We'll talk more about Clapper Vision coming up when the clinics open. But let's get right into today's topic. I'm so excited. Steve Paulette, let's listen. Let's listen to Greg Knoll talk about how the world changed, the mindset changed when everyone saw Bob McTavish from Australia go up the face of a wave. Let's go to number 10.
It was not only a change in the way people surf, but in the mindset, and I don't know, it was just a huge goddamn change. To me, McTavish was definitely the guy that broke the spell. Or started the ball, kicked the ball in the ass and got it rolling down the hill. And then all hell broke loose.
All hell broke loose. I want you to hear Bob McTavish talk about how he came to Hawaii, the mecca for surfing, for the first time in the early 60s. And as he says it, he was actually disappointed in watching these beautiful waves only be ridden to go down the face of the wave. He was disappointed. The nerve of him to say that. As we say at Cedars, the chutzpah for him to say that about the Hawaiian surfer. Let's go to number one.
Well, being in Hawaii and being so disappointed with the Hawaiian heroes of how straight and stiff their surfing was, I was so disenchanted by the Hawaiian surfers and shapers. Their boards were so big. Now, 10.6 was a baby, you know, and 11-footers and 11.6s were pretty standard. These guys were taking off, doing one turn, one big slow turn, and going straight. And you go, how disappointing, you know, like I expected to see more than that, you know.
And you may ask yourself, how does a game-changing idea come about? Well, for many people, it's in a dream. My very first patent for using ultrasonic tools to break up cement prostheses that were in bone with cement was because my wife made me go to the dentist. But it was that night, 2 a.m, I woke up and said, I'm in a dream. And I saw to use dental tools in my world of orthopedic surgery. Listen to McTavish tell you how he came up with the whole idea of going up the face of the wave on a shorter board. It was a dream. Number two.
When I saw those waves in Hawaii, what we were riding, wanted to surf Sunset Beach. I wanted to be able to go and crank and use the vertical face instead of just taking off and going in a straight line running across the wave. I really wanted to work the face. So I had this dream one night as I was riding this board. It was about 8 feet long and it was stubby and I could see, I woke up in, after the dream with it clear in my mind, I can still see it now, of this climbing and dropping on big 8 to 10 foot wave and climbing on the face like this. And I woke up and went, that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to make a surfboard that can do that.
It sounds like Ed Bradley interviewing Bob Dylan. How did you come up with the song, Blowing in the Wind, he asks him. And Bob Dylan says, it just came through me in an instant. I was just the vehicle for the song. Are you kidding me? But yeah, that's how it happens. It's already packaged. You see the idea. I can't wait to ask Steve Richmond, how did the Milwaukee Sawzall come about? Who was the engineer who went to sleep one night and dreamed it up? Let's go to number three.
The murmur on the beach was, McTavish and Nat are here with those strange boards. I wonder how they will go. You know, there was light chatter amongst the crew. So he was under pressure when he showed up at sunset for his heat. And everybody took a look at the boards and went, I don't think so.
That's Bob Cooper, a legendary surfboard shaper. Let's go to number four.
He took off on a wave, big, you know, took off behind the peak, big 10-foot West Bowl sunset, dropped down, laid that thing over on a rail.
It was a turn heard around the world. Bob McTavish had carved a vertical track at Sunset Beach.
Well, what happened is the board skidded almost 3 feet. And luckily for him, he had this big giant fin on a thing. It was like a Greeno-style fin that caught it at the bottom of the thing. And then the board went vertically right back up the face.
Here's more from Jerry Lopez, number 5.
Everybody held their breath at that moment because he went, drew a line on that board that no one still standing on a surfboard had ever drawn before.
Number 6.
It wasn't so much about of the board. It was the idea that you could ride a shorter board. They had never considered that. Because technically, you can't hang 10 on a short board. You can't do the beautiful poses, the stable walks, the drop knee turns. So this is a whole style concept that you had to toss out and go, okay, what can we do on these little things?
Number 8.
After that, everything changed, and you know, people wanted to start drawing those kinds of lines. Instead of going straight across the wave, they wanted to go up to the top and come back down and go back up again.
And here comes the best soundbite of all, because when they describe the game changer, this surfer says, it looked like the clappers. Listen to this one. And by the way, this is Mike Perry, a local shaper. When Bob McTavish came to California with that short board to Rincon, one of the greatest waves in the world, here near Santa Barbara, near Ventura, number 9.
The word that week, just that week alone, had come down that McTavish was up there and he was surfing, and he was surfing unbelievably well. We're parked on the highway. It's foggy, it's kind of a funky day, but the size is there, it's glassy. And this guy came weaving in from outside around the corner of the point, right into the first part of the point, just against the grain, whack, whack, whack. Never seen surfing like that, ever. Completely not what we'd been trained up to do. Wasn't riding the nose, he was just shredding the hell out of it.
Cut everything down, modified the whole deal, took away the radical V-bottom, pulled the tail in, kept it flat, just had a very slight, soft V in the tail. And that board went like the clappers.
It went like the clappers. Love it. All right, coming up next, I want to share with you the revolution, the game changer in art, what Claude Monet did. But you'll hear it from Sister Wendy Beckett. She has a lisp. She doesn't have a perfect voice, but listen carefully to how she describes the art world, the game changer. Coming up next on the Weekend Warriors Show here on 710 ESPN.
You're listening to the Weekend Warriors Show presented by Cedars-Sinai.
What's going on, LA? This is Kobe Bryant.
Hey, Robbie, do you like donuts?
Start your weekend off right, listening to the Weekend Warriors Show with Dr. Clapper.
I love donuts.
Every Saturday morning from 7 to 9 a.m. on ESPN, 710, home of your Los Angeles Lakers.
That's what we're talking about today. Welcome back, Weekend Warriors. The revolution, it's in the air. You'll never guess the name of the group from the 60s that sang that song. Thunderclap Newman. That's like a Jewish rainstorm. Thunderclap Newman. Remember Seinfeld? Newman. Well, he's in that song. Thunderclap Newman's the name of the group. Talk about one-hit wonders. Amazing. But the revolution is what we're talking about, the game changer. My guest at 8:15, I cannot wait to talk to him, is Steve Richman. He's the boss at the Milwaukee Tool Company. And I'm going to give a shout out to a plumber in Ventura, Gold Coast Plumbing, Logan Smith. I had to have new faucet put in my shower in Ventura. It was so corroded from being near the water for so many years. The whole thing needed to be redone. And Logan Smith showed up in his plumbing truck. Love him. And you know me, I'm not going to disappear because I can't wait to watch to see how the hell do you do this. Maybe I'll learn something from the tools and the technique of a plumber. You could always learn from somebody. I must be such a pest as a customer for a plumber or a carpenter or an electrician. But I can't help it because I'm going to take that stuff to the operating room someday. Logan Smith opens up the back of his plumbing truck. He must have had 20 Milwaukee tools, pipe cutters, saws, all kinds of stuff. I said to him, you gotta be kidding me. You have all these Milwaukee tools. And he said, Dr. Clapper, because they're the best. And they are. And when I have Steve Richman come on at 8:15, I'm going to ask him. We need Milwaukee tools in the operating room. We got a lot of good companies, but if you came into the operating room with a Milwaukee tool, you would take over the world that I live in. Speaking of ACLs, by the way, another young man that I did yesterday, also in his mid-40s, but when he was a teenager, he had his ACL done. And in those days with that technology, it was like Gale Sayers days. So this young man in his mid-40s, I had to take all those old carpentry screws out of his knee because he wore out the cartilage. And even though he's only in his mid-40s, he needed an implant. And I think my dad would be very proud of the mitered cuts I'd made to take that crooked pretzel-looking knee and make it into a beautiful straight structure that he can put weight on and walk around without any pain. I mean, the whole idea of having a metal screw in your body sticking out underneath your skin, trust me, that ain't pleasant. But when you're bone on bone because of it, it really makes life difficult. What a joy it is for me to be able to use power tools and respect the power tools and how they change my life. Game changers, that's what I want to talk about today. In art, in sports, and in surgery, in the art world. In 1841, John Rand, not a well-known painter by any means, but he came up with the idea of putting the oil paint in a zinc tube with a cap on it so you could squirt out the amount of paint that you wanted. It seems like such a simple idea. And in 1841, it was. But nobody had ever come up with that before. And the French painters who were about to revolutionize the world of art by painting outdoors because they had one objective in mind. We want to paint the natural sunlight, not in the studio, but outdoors, to paint landscapes, to paint flowers, something as simple as that. Claude Monet was the king of it all. Let's listen to Sister Wendy Beckett talk about the revolution. And particularly, I'm going to want you to pay attention when she says it was because of this way of putting paint in a tube. Let's go to number one.
Everyone loves the Impressionists. We're familiar with them. We understand them. What we forget is that they're a watershed, and forever after, the story of painting is different.
This woman has a lisp, as you can hear. She's not a perfect speaker. She's wearing her nun outfit as well. You say to yourself, who is this? But no one puts into words better the analysis of art than Sister Wendy Beckett from the BBC. I just love this woman. Let's go to number two.
When Impressionism began, it caused something of an art revolution in Paris. But unlike political uprisings, this revolution was started accidentally by a man who simply wanted to paint the world around him as he saw it.
And now listen carefully when she says, because of the new technology, a portable easel. Okay, that was great. But also the paint in tubes. Number three.
They started to paint outside. New inventions like portable easels and ready-mixed tubes of paint meant they could abandon their studios for the open air. They wanted to catch the single moment a snapshot approach. Impressionist paintings are all dashes and inspiration, spontaneous but unpolished.
Steve Paulette's going to put on the Facebook page, so we'll make this a visual radio show. The painting Impressionism by Claude Monet and the paintings of the water lilies around his house, where he could go outside and paint the shimmering light, painting water, painting haystacks in a field across the road, but painting these haystacks in the morning, in the afternoon, and in the early evening. It's awesome to see the paying attention to the light. Claude Monet had a house just outside of Paris called Giverny, and that's where these lily ponds were. Number four.
Claude Monet, the young revolutionary, became rich, famous, and respectable. He bought a house at Giverny, near Paris, but in the country. Planning his garden became a passion almost equal to painting.
And now you'll listen to her describe. He saw things differently and could put them on the canvas, particularly because of these paints in a tube. Number five.
Monet really saw. He saw things that people had never seen before. The color of snow, the color of shadows, the color of water. He was intent on capturing every flickering change of light, every fleeting moment. And this is never more exhilaratingly shown than in his last great series, The Water Lilies.
The last 20 years of his life, he spent painting one giant mural of paintings. And they're housed in a single building in Paris, if you ever get to go. But you can look this up on YouTube. You walk into this room and you're completely surrounded 360 degrees. And you stand in the center. It's like going to mid-court at the Staples Center and looking 360 degrees around you. Instead of seeing fans in the stands, you're going to be seeing paintings of the shimmering water lilies. So now Sister Wendy walks into L'Orangerie. That's the name of the building. And she describes for you what those tubes of paint, what that game-changing idea allowed Claude Monet to do to you, me, and to Sister Wendy. Listen to her walking into this room and what it makes her feel like. It's awesome. Number six.
When I come in here, I feel disorientated. It's too big. I can't take it in, which means, of course, I can't control it. And I feel not so much I'm looking at it, is that I'm looking in it. And what are we actually looking at? Well, we know that this is Monet's beloved pond at Giverny, or rather, the surface of the pond.
And she's wearing her nun outfit. She'll tell you, I've never been swimming in water in a long time. But it makes me feel like I'm in the water because of what he's done in this revolution. Number seven.
Because year after year he'd looked at this surface reflecting the clouds, the sky, the trees, the foliage, the water lilies. It's intensely exhilarating to see it. It's a long, long time since I went swimming. But when I'm here, I feel I'm swimming through the blue brightness, looking up, or floating over the blue beauty, looking down, set free. Oh, and I can understand why people come here, just to stand, silent, being liberated, being set at peace.
Can you imagine? And I've been in that building. She's exactly right. And finally, number eight.
The Impressionists created a dreamy world of sunlight and pleasure. Here was real life, but only at its most beautiful and charming. Why shouldn't art be light-hearted? I can imagine Renoir asking that question. He paints a world without sadness, where there's nothing dark or sinister.
There is nothing dark or sinister when you're trying to capture the light on a canvas with a paintbrush and paints. But to be able to paint outdoors in plain air was a revolution. It was a game changer because of the new tool. Bob McTavish could go up the wave. Hawaiians never did that beforehand. And Jerry Lopez is pointing out the future. That Milwaukee Sawzall that my dad met in when I was 8 years old, so this is in the mid-60s, changed his life. The enthusiasm you hear in Sister Wendy's voice is what I heard from my father holding that new power tool in his hands. When the surgeons were able to put back together Adrian Peterson's knee, knowing that Gale Sayers had a career-ending injury, same thing for Joe Namath. Look at Tom Brady, all these. He's still playing at 43 with the same injury Joe Namath had to end his career because of. Game-changing ideas. I just love being around inventors, people who see the world differently. Coming up next, I'm going to explain what the world of surgery is like with game-changing ideas as well. The number is 877-710-ESPN. Shoulders, knees, hips. I don't even know where to begin to talk to you. Until then, you're going to hear Thunderclap Newman. There's something in the air. You're listening to the one and only Weekend Warriors Show here on 710 ESPN.
You're listening to the Weekend Warrior Show, presented by Cedar Sinai.
What's going on, LA? This is Kobe Bryant.
I love this guy.
Start your weekend off right, listening to the Weekend Warrior Show with Dr. Clapper.
Robbie, come with me. We're going to fix the toilet.
Every Saturday morning from 7 to 9 a.m. on ESPN, 710, home of your Los Angeles Lakers.
Don't you know, we're talking about a revolution sounds. Don't you know, we're talking about a revolution. It sounds like a whisper while they're standing in the welfare line.
Welcome back, Weekend Warriors. Crying at the doorsteps of the I don't want to interrupt her majestic voice, the great Tracy Chapman. A revolution. That's what we're talking about today. In art, in sports, and in surgery. The game changer. And at 8:15, the boss of the Milwaukee Tool Company, Steve Richmond's calling in. It's going to be a special moment for me to publicly thank him and his company for making my father so happy. Growing up, seeing him get his very first beat-up, used Milwaukee Sawzall. And all those years later, still with the joy I have in creating new tools for the operating room. Game changers. Let's take some calls. The clinic's open. The number's 877-710-ESPN. Reggie, you're on with Dr. Clapper. How can I help?
Doctor, this is Reggie from L.A., my second time ever calling you. I used to work as an aerospace employee, computer sitting down, and I had knee issues. And okay. I was not letting this guy stick needles in my knee the second time because I didn't know I let him do it the first time. Mm-hmm. Man, I found this guy on Chuck Henry's Eye on L.A. show, and I went there, and he has a cabbage statue of himself, Cabbage Patch.
Oh, God.
Arm around a knee. So I knew I was in the right place. That guy and you are something else, man. And I'm a product. So I just had to call, tell your listeners, you're giving them the right stuff. Only pain I have is seeing my family have pain. I'm the first grandkid. So I'm 56 last month. And the only thing that stopped me was COVID because they locked up the basketball court. Me and my boys, we've been killing it ever since. We met at 10th grade when I moved here from Memphis. And I'm just a run, jump, and play kind of guy.
Are the Lakers going to win tonight, Reggie?
Bad man, huh?
Are the Lakers going to win tonight?
Maybe not tonight because AD's a little beat down. Mm. But I love that LeBron mentality. We had Mamba, now we got LeBron, Mamba 2. Mm-hmm. And I think we're going to do this because he needs that number fifth championship so he can get in the room with Kobe and Michael and all of them and smoke cigars when they get old.
You know what I love the most, Reggie? I love the most when you watch Frank Vogel giving a talk in the locker room and then everybody sticks their hand in and they all chant the same word, all as a team together. And the word that they chant to get them up for the game, to go back on the court, they together say Mamba. And it's
wow.
Just, it just rips your heart out. Except to know that this season is dedicated to the great Kobe Bryant.
No doubt.
Thanks so much for checking in, Reggie. I really appreciate
sure,
it.
Man.
All right.
Always,
Steve Paulette, who do we got next? Larry, you're on with Dr. Clapper. How can I help?
Yes. Good morning, Dr. Clapper. Good morning. In March.
So how old are you?
My,
what do you do for a living, Larry?
I'm 76. I just turned 76. And I used to teach here in L.A. I taught for 35 years.
Wow. What subject?
Well, I taught everything. I taught high school math. I taught fifth and sixth grade. I taught ESL. But sixth grade was probably the most enjoyable experience.
So you teaching math, you know the law of the nines?
Yes.
So I just think it's the coolest thing in the world that 9 times 2 is 18. Well, 1 plus 8 is 9. 9 times 3 is 27. 2 plus 7 equals 9. And on and on. Every time you have a multiple, it becomes a 9. Is there anything else that cool in math that you can teach me?
No, but I used to teach that to my students. I remember that was the easiest one to...
Now, where did you grow up and what did your father do for a living?
Well, I grew up here in Los Angeles. I went to school here at Dorsey High School, where Keyshawn Johnson went to school, and then I went to UCLA.
You went to UCLA. Wow, and you're 76. So tell me about going to the basketball games as a college student.
Well, I was fortunate enough to see when Kareem was there, Lou Alcindor, so that was quite an experience. And then I was there with Walt Hazard, Gail Goodrich, and, well, that's when UCLA was really, really good. So that was quite an experience.
What was it like to watch John Wooden with that role program patrolling the sideline? What was that like as a student in college at UCLA back in the day seeing that?
Well, that was quite an experience. I had a friend of mine who was a trainer at UCLA basketball, and he was able to sneak us in a couple of times to watch him watch UCLA practice. And that was quite an experience to watch him because everything was very detailed, the way he would go with his little 5x7 cards and how he would go through his whole program. That was quite an experience to watch. I did that twice, fortunately, and it was quite an experience.
I still think it's the greatest thing in sports when you hear players like Lou Alcindor, who Kareem, or Bill Walton, the greatest basketball players probably ever of their time in college, talk about John Wooden saying, all right, I'm going to teach you all how to put your shoes and socks on. And them looking at each other like, are you kidding me? I know how to put my shoes and socks on. And John Wooden basically saying to them, actually, no, you don't. And if you think about it psychologically, here you are, a McDonald's All-American or whatever the equivalent was in those days, being told how great you are, and now your first day with Coach Wooden, he says, you're not only not that great to me, but you don't even know how to put your shoes and socks on, is an amazing way to clean the slate, to let the player know you're starting from zero. I just think psychologically, that man was brilliant about how to get his players to play at a level they didn't even dream of before. Wow, were you lucky to be able to see that firsthand. Good for you. All right, how can I help you? What'd you do to yourself?
Well, in March, I tore my quadricep tendon, and because of COVID, they weren't able to operate until April the 1st. So I've had the surgery, and I've gone through all of the rehab, and I've got your book, Heal Your Knees with Linda Huey, and I've been doing all the exercises that you recommend.
Thank you.
I'm still experiencing a lot of stiffness in my knee, and I just don't know how much longer will I have that. And number two, can I over-exercise? I mean, I have a pool here at my house, and I have a recumbent bike, and because there's not much else. I've been exercising pretty much daily. So my question is, can I over-exercise?
You know, it's a great question, Larry, because the fact that Adrian Peterson, by the way, my wife always says I never answer the question, so here we go again. But the fact that Adrian Peterson was able to return, not only almost breaking Eric Dickerson's record the year after he has his ACL fixed, but the fact that he came back within 8 months of the surgery is remarkable. Now, I take care of many, many stuntmen and stuntwomen in this town who are really behind the scenes making the greatest movies we see. I've had Terry Leonard on as a guest, one of the greatest of all time, and I get to go to the Taurus Awards where all the stuntmen and women are, and I just, you know, as soon as I park the car, I get hellos from just about everybody at the meeting, at the awards ceremony, because I've operated on so many of them. What I learned from taking care of stuntmen and women, what I learned from taking care of professional athletes, what we all learned from Dr. Andrews fixing Adrian Peterson's knee, and why he was able to come back so quickly was because of his over-exercising. To some extent, it's the non-compliant patients that I learned the most from, that we learned the most from, of what the limits are. Now, you have to be careful, Larry, because your body is talking to you. It's whispering to you. When you're having stiffness and pain and swelling, you really have to listen to that feedback and temper your recovery. The biggest mistake people make after knee surgery is they'll go to therapy for an hour, 3 days a week, as if that's going to cure them. Are you kidding me? An hour, 3 days a week is bupkis. It's a Yiddish word for nothing, because you actually may be traumatizing the knee more than helping it with an aggressive therapy program. And you could be doing that as well by getting even more stiffness and more pain. So here's a clapper vision for you. When you make pizza, you start with a ball of dough. If you look at the guys in the pizzeria who are doing it well, they push the ball of dough down. They stretch it. They throw it in the air. They work it piano, piano, slowly, slowly. They work to expand the gluten in the dough. Scar tissue in your knee is like that ball of dough. If you attack it and make it a pizza immediately, you're going to tear the dough. You need to work it. You need to work it. Therapy, in my opinion, which is why I wrote the book with Linda Huey, is better served by you, Larry, by riding your bike for 10 minutes, but do it every couple of hours. Work it like a pizza. This is better than an hour, 3 days a week intensively. Where is the value of physical therapy? In coaching you, just like John Wooden coached those players, where he or she can keep a clipboard and give you tips and advice, but it's more of guiding you in therapy than actually doing the physical therapy. You need to be doing the physical therapy yourself. Listen, it's only September. You had your surgery in April. Forget about it. You're nowhere near. It takes 9 months to have a baby. Why does it take 9 months? Isn't that too long? You know what? God did not ask me how many months it should be to have a baby. This is how long it takes. Your recovery is going to take a year, 12 months. The day after it's a year, then we can have a conversation. Until then, keep talking to your knee. Slowly, every hour, every 2 hours, go hit it again. Go a little bit further with the range of motion. And here's the other mistake most people make. Don't start working on strengthening yet. Get your range of motion first. Then you work on strengthening. Because if you traumatize the recovery, and that goes for your shoulder, your hip, your knee, your ankle, right away they want to work you with TheraBands. Right away they want to work you with weights to work on strengthening, to prove themselves to you. I'm not interested in that. The range of motion is the greatest value of a physical therapist to help you get there. The strength will come with time. Don't let anybody inject any cortisone, stem cells, any cockamamie needles into your knee. This is a process. It's a bad injury, a quadriceps tear. Really bad, because it involves four separate muscles attaching to the patella, attaching to the kneecap. Sounds like you're making progress. Be nice to yourself. Don't torture yourself. Does that help?
Yes, it did. And I appreciate your information. We'll take it to heart.
Okay, Larry, I appreciate that. Well, listen, you're a total stranger. I never met you. I want you to find a total stranger today yourself. Do something nice for them. That's how you'll be thanking me.
Okay. Thank you, Dr. Claver.
All right. God bless you, Larry. All right, Warriors, we'll take a break, pay some bills. The number is 877-710-ESPN. I got to tell you, the chocolate babka that I had this week came from a very special place in L.A. One of the best chocolate babkas I've ever had. Coming up next, I'm going to tell you where you can get it. You're listening to the one and only Weekend Warriors Show on 710 ESPN.
You're listening to the Weekend Warrior Show, presented by Cedars-Sinai.
What's going on, L.A.? This is Kobe Bryant.
Carly's got a gift card for you.
Start your weekend off right. Listening to the Weekend Warrior Show with Dr. Clapper.
K-L-A-P-P-A-H. Clapper.
Every Saturday morning from 7 to 9 a.m. on ESPN. 710, home of your Los Angeles Lakers.
Where's the revolution?
Welcome back, Weekend Warriors. That's Depeche Mode. Where's the revolution? It's in game-changing ideas, in art, in sports, and in surgery. Before I get to the babka, let's take a call. Let's go to William. You're on with Dr. Clapper. How can I help?
Dr. Clapper, I'm definitely interested in that chocolate babka. I'm in the L.A. area, so I don't want to forget that. Right off the bat. How you doing today, boss?
I'm doing good. So what do you do for a living, William?
Right now, I do road restoration for Tesla. Out here in Los Angeles, I own a radio station called Hayes Radio Network here in Los Angeles. Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
How am I doing on the radio? Because I got no training.
What was that?
How am I doing on the radio since you're a radio expert and nobody trained me to do this?
You spread a good vibe, man. Just what you said. How can you thank me by spreading, just sharing something and giving something to somebody? I love that, man. I do that. I try to push that every day, man. I try to help people.
And William, what did your father do for a living? Where did you grow up?
My father was a mason and a truck driver. So in New York City, we used to do bricks and foundations, and we used to lay mortar together.
Did you ever see your father get in a fist fight with somebody?
Oh, yeah, man. I played hockey growing up, and I played on his team at the age of 13. I was playing adult league, and they wanted to take me out. I was really good, and someone threw an elbow at me right in the crease, and my dad seen it. We had a huge bench brawl. I seen him break hands, and he was banned from the rink for about 3 weeks. 3 years. He was banned from the rink. He couldn't take me to practice no more. I played travel hockey my whole life.
What was his first name?
His name was Bill. Bill Pitsikalis. Rest in peace.
So you're Bill Jr.?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Do you have any brothers or sisters?
I have three sisters, Nikki, Georgette, and Alexa.
Wow. And you're the baby or the oldest?
I'm the oldest.
Wow. You are a Bill Jr., man. You had to take care of those girls. If anything happened to them, your dad would smack you in the head before he'd smack the perpetrator.
Man, Dr. Clapper, you sound like my father. You sound like my grandfather. So, yeah.
How can I help you? What'd you do to yourself, young man?
So I was playing hockey and semi-pro football growing up. I got sciatica down my left leg. I have a herniated disc and two, I forgot the word that they call it. It's not herniated, but rupture.
Bulging disc.
Bulging disc. I think it's like L3, S1. So, I mean, I've lost some weight. When I was playing hockey, it was like 160, 170 pounds. I got up to like 200 when I was playing football, which was really strenuous on my back. So I lost some weight. I'm back down to like 175, 180. I just noticed that, like, so I had a steroid injection in my back.
No, I hate that.
They wanted to do three of them. I really was negative about the first one, but I let them do it because they really pushed me at Stony Brook, and I let them do it. And that was the worst idea of my life. It made it way worse. So now, after that, I just noticed that it's so much sciatic pain down from my back through my hip joint down my into my left knee. With that being said, I've noticed that yoga, meditation, I know it sounds a little crazy, but when I'm tense, now all of my tension, all my stress, I feel it in my hips.
Mm-hmm.
I feel tight in my hips. I don't know if that makes sense to you.
All right, here's my best advice for you, William. Number one, don't ever let them give you another shot of cortisone anywhere in your body. Number two,
never again.
There's a book I wrote with Linda Yue called Heal Your Hips. We give the money to the homeless. Get a copy. Even though it's about hips, it will help you because it's all about how to exercise by walking in a pool. If you take up swimming, and in the coronavirus times, it's hard to get to a pool, but her place is open. You can get to her place in Culver City. But it's the greatest way, the buoyancy of the water, the resistance on the muscle, the fact that the water's touching your skin speaks to the brain through something called proprioception. If you bring water into your life as an exercise, it will help you really put this off. Now, if God forbid you end up with a foot drop or you can't pee, or this is really still debilitating, I'm going to give you a couple of names of some good spine people, not to have surgery, but just to meet with them to see. I trust these guys. They'll be conservative. Spine surgery is the last thing I want you or anybody else to have. But I also don't need you to be tortured. You're going to basically adopt the water program. That's going to be your holistic approach. But getting an opinion, one of the guys' names is Terrence Kim, K-I-M. You can remember that. He's at Cedars. All right? Terrence Kim is fantastic. And the other guy's name is Robert Pashman, P-A-S-H-M-A-N. Those are two really strong spine people, and I trust their judgment. They're not going to be quick with a knife. Probably the best spine surgeon in the city, his name is Pat Johnson. He's a neurosurgeon, also at Cedars. Pat Johnson. If God forbid this persists, those guys are the people I need you to see for their opinion. You're going to need an updated MRI. You get that MRI, I am more than happy for you to call in, and I will explain it with some clapper vision so you'll understand exactly what's going on with your spine. But right now, you need to get better. And getting better is holistic, and it's getting in the pool, okay?
Yes, sir, Dr. Clapper. Thank you so much.
All right, William. And just like you heard me say before, you're a total stranger to me, but I just helped you. You now find a total stranger today. Do something nice for them. That's all you'll be thanking me. And thanks so much for checking in with me.
Say no more. Chocolate babka, though. Chocolate babka. Don't forget.
Chocolate babka. You got to go to Nordoff and Reseda in a shopping center. It's called the Delicious Bakery. They're Russian. They know how to make a chocolate babka. And even when it gets stale, William, you dip it in coffee, it tastes even better.
I'm on my way.
You
have
God bless
a great
you.
Day. Bless
all right, you too, young man. All right, Warriors. Where are we at? We got to take a break. I got to come back and tell some stories. Stories in anticipation of 8:15, talking to Steve Richmond from Milwaukee Tools. Game changers in art, in sports, and in surgery. Coming up next on the Weekend Warriors Show here on 710 ESPN.